Coming up on KUCB News, an Alaska's mayor will remain in office, and biologists are investigating an otter die-off. Stay tuned.
Local news is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Wednesday, March 7th, 2018. Unalaska's mayor has survived a recall effort that accused him of misconduct and poor leadership. According to initial election results, 62% of voters supported Mayor Frank Kelty.
I was concerned that it would be a pretty tight and maybe come down to the absentees, but it didn't, and I want to thank the community for their support.
Election officials counted the 463 ballots by hand after the voting machine jammed. Their tally showed that 177 Unalaskans voted yes to recalling Kelty, while 286 voted no. There are still 74 absentee and question ballots that must be canvassed Friday, but City Clerk Margie Veter says they won't affect the final results. Kelty will remain in office for the rest of his term, which expires in October of 2019. He says he's glad the recall is finally over for both himself and the community.
I just hope the animosity and the anger goes away and we can work together for the betterment of Unalaska.
Kelty says his first goal is to build a positive relationship with the new city manager. The Unalaskans who sponsored the recall petition were not immediately available for comment. They had charged Kelty with pursuing an illegal dock agreement with the shipping company Matson, along with criticizing his leadership and respect for public process. Scientists have confirmed what indigenous people have known for centuries, that the wind influences the movement of northern fur seal pups. For KUCB and Alaska's Energy Desk, Zoe Sobel reports that this research could help scientists get a clearer picture of this mysteriously declining species.
In the late 1800s, the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury sent Captain C.L. Hooper to the Pribilof Islands to learn as much as he could about the northern fur seal from the Alaska Native people who lived there. At the time, the fur trade was big business. One of the lessons he recorded was that the seals are known to travel with the wind when possible. Now scientists have the data to back up that traditional knowledge.
We have this amazing technology that really allows us this very cool look at the lives of an individual animal and where it goes and what it does.
Noel Pelland is a physical oceanographer at the Alaska Fisheries Science Center.
That's helping us to quantify some of these things that have been discussed by the ALU hunters.
Pelland is studying how climate affects the survival of northern fur seals in the Bering Sea, and wind may be an important factor. After pups leave the Pribilof Islands in late fall, they can migrate thousands of miles. Varying wind conditions mean pups can end up in a range of locations, from the Aleutian Islands to the Gulf of Alaska. Pelland wants to know if the way the pups migrate and where they end up is affecting their survival.
In the best years, about 50% of the pups who leave on their migration will make it to age two. In the worst years, only about 20% will make it through their migration.
So far, Pelland and his colleagues have compared data from satellite-tagged pups with weather models. Now they want to compare year-to-year changes in the survival of the pups with where the pups end up. And he says the research helps make the case for all scientists to take traditional knowledge into account.
There's this idea of a separation between quote-unquote scientific knowledge and traditional knowledge, and I think a much better way to look at that is as a continuum, really, you know, that there isn't this real formal separation. It's all knowledge.
Wind might not be a factor in the fur seal decline, Pelland says, but better understanding its role is important. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in Unalaska.
Meanwhile, an unusual number of otters has died in southwest Alaska. As KMXT's Mitch Borden reports, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has launched an investigation to find out what's killing these seemingly healthy animals.
In late January, dead and dying sea otters washed ashore near Port Muller and Nelson Lagoon. At the time, it wasn't clear why these otters were dying, says Michelle St. Martin, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service biologist who investigated the event. 40 otters have been confirmed dead, but some locals have reported a number closer to 200. Some of the otters were sent to Madison, Wisconsin for analysis. The cause of death was determined to be an infection caused by the bacteria Streptococcus, which is also known as strep, says St. Martin.
It tends to be sort of a quick death. And so all the carcasses that we received, all the animals were in good body condition.
Strep occurs naturally and has caused otter deaths in the past. But St. Martin says not a lot is known about strep.
We don't really know why this bacteria or how this bacteria goes about in the ecosystem.
Joel Garlick Miller is also a biologist for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service who focuses on sea otters. He studied similar mortality events in the past at Ketchumak Bay. He says one thing scientists do know is otters get strep from something in their diet, but researchers aren't sure from what.
The otters are eating these prey items and getting access to it that way rather than just swimming through the water and catching this.
Biologists aren't sure if it's possible for humans to get a strep infection from a dead otter. Garlick Miller says there hasn't been any evidence showing otters have passed the bacteria on to any other animal.
In Ketchumak Bay, it's been very interesting. There's a whole bunch of marine mammals in that area. We got minke whales, humpback whales, harbor seals, sea lions. There's all sorts of birds that have been scavenging on the otter carcasses. We haven't really seen any sort of strep-related mortality in any of their species.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service doesn't know how the recent die-off affected the otter population near Nelson Lagoon and Port Muller. Sea otters in southwest Alaska are considered a threatened species. Their numbers have decreased around 50% since the 1980s. Currently, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is preparing a survey on the area's otter population, which will be released later this year. In Kodiak, I'm Mitch Borden.
Alaska Governor Bill Walker stood with the governors of Colorado and Ohio late last month to announce a new blueprint for healthcare policy. The governor's blueprint is a broad statement of their principles, and they're prodding Congress to get a move on. APRN's Liz Ruskin has the story.
It might seem like the healthcare debate disappeared into the Washington night sometime last year. After Republican bills to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act died, there was an effort to keep and fix by restoring insurance subsidies and shoring up the markets. It fizzled in the Senate. Ohio Republican Governor John Kasich says that's a shame.
And they can't seem to get this done. And it's all politics. It's all, Obama this and Obama that. Well, you know what? That system needs changed.
Bipartisanship is a key element in this blueprint. Kasich is a Republican. Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper is a Democrat. Walker, an independent. Walker says party lines shouldn't apply to health care policy.
The pendulum swinging back and forth between administrations on health care, that's what's got to stop. Because the ones that get hurt in that swing of the pendulum are those that need health care and need coverage.
The blueprint calls for market stability, innovation, and competition. An idea on the rise in some states is imposing work requirements on people who receive Medicaid. Alaska Senate President Pete Kelly of Fairbanks has sponsored a bill to do that. Health Commissioner Valerie Davidson says most Alaskans who are covered by Medicaid live in households with at least one working member already. And every week, Davidson says, the governor hears from people who say enrolling in Medicaid allowed them to get treatment for debilitating problems and get back to work.
And they were looking at not being able to ever work in their lives again. We see firsthand the opportunity that the availability of health care has on improving the productivity of Alaskans' lives.
The state's Medicaid rolls grew last year by about 26,000, and about 40% were children. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Iditarod mushers are about a third of the way through the race, and the leader leapfrogging has begun in earnest. About 20 sled dog teams are into the Takata checkpoint, about 330 miles into the 1,000-mile race to Nome. But Norwegian Jor Olsen stayed only 5 minutes before getting back on the trail and passing quickly through the next stop at Ofer. Olsen is in the lead for now after leaving behind a handful of top teams in Takata. That includes defending champ Mitch Seavey, as well as Ali Zirkel, Ray Reddington Jr., and Pete Kaiser. Seavey was the first into Takata, and a small crowd was gathered last night as he arrived in a light snow a little before 10 p.m.
I'd like to stay.
Same.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mitch, what's your bib number?
13. And I have 13 dogs.
Okay.
Seavey was in a good mood and unusually talkative as he declared his mandatory 24-hour rest. He's well-positioned in this year's race, though it's still early, and Musher's long-term strategies are just now becoming clear. Seavey has had to adjust his plans to contend with fresh snow and warm temperatures, making for a slower trail. He's also had to scrap his technique of carrying dogs inside his sled, rotating them between runs and rest, a style of mushing that he's helped to refine in recent years.
It's too slow and soft this year. Well, it worked at first. I used it for a while. But I gave up on it because my dogs were working too hard. I hurt two dogs' back legs, I think, because of it.
Yesterday also saw a fan favorite scratch from the race as Willow Musher Didi Jonro pulled out. Jonro was running in her 36th Iditarod and had said it would be her last. According to a statement from the Iditarod, Jonro made the decision to pull out at Rainy Pass for, quote, personal health reasons and concern for taking care of her dog team. Jonro's Iditarod record includes 16 top 10 showings, as well as 2 second-place finishes. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.